So good morning, everybody. I briefly introduce myself. I am Anna Maria, and I'm a postdoc researcher at Ca' Foscari University in Venice. And I am basically an historian because I deal with written sources of the Dukedom of Venice in the 9th and 10th century. But in the past, I worked on funerary archaeology and cemeteries, working with Cristina La Rocca, and so this is why I'm here today. The title of my presentation is Gender, Kinship, and Social Identity in the Funerary Dimensions of the Kingdom of the Lombards. Like all the cultural categories, the representation of identity and otherness varied in time and space according to the socio-political framework of a period and a region. And in the early Middle Ages, between the 5th and the 6th century, during the so-called migration period, the Mediterranean world underwent considerable and substantial changes. Within the territory of the former Roman Empire, in a couple of centuries, several barbarian kingdoms were born on different ethnic, religious, and cultural traditions, which shaped new political realities. The long-time interaction between Romans and Germans, or barbarians, whatever words you want to use, well before the fall of the empire in 476, had in fact brought about new social model based on new values, like, for instance, the military skill and the personal friendship, which have become central in regulating the relationship between the public power, the lion, the ecclesiastic aristocracies, and the rest of the population of free condition. And even if, of course, with many differences in the tale, this phenomenon interests Europe as a whole, and of course also the Italian peninsula, where the Lombards settled in the second half of the 6th century, giving life to an independent kingdom over northern Italy, the Po Valley, Tuscany, and the southern territories of Spoleto and Benevento. And as a consequence of the conquest, the creation of a new political balance had a strong influence on the Italian social structure at both an horizontal and vertical level. And the written sources show, in fact, a state ruled by Catholic kings who wrote in Latin, laws valid for the entire country's population, so without any difference between locals and newcomers. Indeed, all the citizens are divided up according to their land ownership, which gave the ability to fighting in the army, either as simple foot soldiers or as horse warriors. And as documented in public and private documents, the articulation of the military and administrative apparatus was, of course, a long-term process during which several interests acting both from the top and from the bottom of the society brought about new identity boundaries among individuals and groups and communities. And this changeable situation and flexible situation is reflected in the funerary archaeological evidence, which shows between the 6th and the first half of the 7th century an increase of grave goods interred with the dead. And in fact, some of the most exceptional burials of Italy, with many gold and silver artifacts, ornaments, date back to this period. The Lombards did not bring these objects directly from their homeland. Rather, they were produced in Italy by specialized workshops, for example, the Crypta Balbi in Rome, which made accessories for the emerging aristocracy of the kingdom. And so far from being Athenmachus, weapons and Jews, were therefore funerary exhibition symbols of the social and economic status of the dead and of his or her family. In fact, the redistribution of land and richness which occur in this period put constantly in discussion the power and social linkages, and so after the death of an important family member, the position of his her relatives within the community needed to be strongly affirmed and regained, also by means of the provision of grave goods. Even if, in fact, from the mid-7th century, specific royal laws regulated inheritance rights, the scarce use of written agreements and wills gave space to possible encroachments. Beside the grave goods, which actually are only in a small part of the excavated graves, the social and political instability of the period is also represented by the big variety of funerary practices simultaneously in use all over the Lombard Kingdom and depending on the regional, sub-regional, and a local context. This variety, in particular, emerged in comparison with the previous and following period, when there were more homogeneous customs, like, for instance, the epitaphs, the funerary inscription for the Roman time, or the graveyards next to churches for the Carolingian age. Anyway, well before the Lombard settlement, at least from the beginning of the 5th century, the classical funerary ritual had already undergone several transformations, while some aspects of the early medieval funeral had already appeared. In particular, the ban to bury inside the cities had lost its validity with the entrance of graves in the urban space, and the cremation had totally abandoned in favor of the inhumation, so with the habit to dress and furnish the dead. The introduction of both these changes depending on a different perception of the body developed by the Christian thought, which had put the body at the heart of the religious consciousness. But more than this, the church influence did not take part in this transitory phase. The clergy indeed became involved indirectly in the administration of funerals only sometime later, namely during the first half of the 8th century, when finally specific traditions were established about who had to celebrate funerals, where the dead had to be buried, and how their memory had to be passed on. Only then the provision of grave goods stopped, and the parish graveyards started to be commonly used across the Italian territory. So, given that there were no specific rules concerning the treatment of the dead until the beginning of the 8th century, for a long time, the mourner themselves freely chose the most appropriate way to manage the funerals. These were public ceremonies organized by the family to commemorate the dead in front of a more or less large audience, during which specific tasks like the provision of grave goods, the building of the tomb, the care of the body, the choice of the burial site were undertaken in order to achieve a memorable performance, because just the memory was at the heart of the funerary practice. Because, in fact, in the early Middle Ages, the oral communication means was prevalent. The membership linkages within a family or a village were kept alive by taking part to collective rituals, like the funerals, which created a sense of belonging to a community or a territory. Thereafter, early medieval cemetery and graves are special observation point to study our identity and otherness were imagined, constructed, and perceived, at least in the funerary dimension. On this subject, of course, much has already been written and some milestones have already been fixed. And namely that the ethnic origins and the religious affiliation did not play a central role in defining the dead. And that other factors, variable across time and space, such as gender, age, kinship, social status, and local habits, were instead more fundamental, more important. And bearing this interpretation in mind, my study looks at some of the most known Lombard cemeteries of Italy in the light of the binary concept of exclusion, inclusion, and discrimination, integration, through which the old archaeological data can be further analyzed. And so in order to go deeper inside into the different cultural patterns existing behind the cemeteries and to better grasp the models of identity and otherness occurring in them, there are some key questions for the available data. Which were the forms of exclusion, inclusion performed in the funerary context, who practiced them, and to whom they were addressed, and finally, what was their meaning? And to answer this question, several different aspects will be taken into account. And first, the size of the cemetery. Second, its internal spatial organization. And finally, its location in the landscape. A systematic survey of the Italian Lombard cemeteries has not been yet undertaken, and even if some regional syntheses are evident, a traceable distribution map of the graves from the 6th to the 8th centuries is still missing. The quality of the archaeological reports, moreover, is very different from one area to another, given that only a handful of sites has been published according to modern scientific standards. And the present study looks at a sample of cemeteries which are documented at the least by a drawing, a catalogue of the graves, plus a study of the anthropological remains. And thanks to this criteria, 35 burial sites have been selected with a number of 3,617 graves. They are scattered across the Italian region, which were parts in the past of the Lombard kingdom. So for example, in Emilia we have one site, Friuli four sites, Latium three, and so on. Of course, the number of sites for each region does not represent any real concentration rate of the cemeteries, being rather a mirror of the quality of the documentation. As regards the size, the cemetery and the study vary from a minimum of 4 graves with the site of Ferrando to a maximum of 325 graves with the site of Montichiari. And assuming that the traditional Urmidia family was made up of 10-15 individuals on the basis of one of the most well-documented site, the sample has been classified in three main types, so with small cemeteries, medium cemeteries, and large cemeteries. Since unfortunately, some sites have not been completely excavated due to several reasons, because modern destruction and something like that, the classification is, of course, not completely trustable. Among the small cemeteries, we are 11. 6, in fact, may be bigger, which are this one. Oh, no. Among the medium cemetery, which are 8, 4 should be considered bigger. And among the large cemeteries, which are 17, 5 are probably even larger. 1 is made up of 200 graves, but with only 74 found intact, which is Selviciola. And another one is made up of 134 graves, but with only 62 published till now, which is Suvizzo, the last one. As regards internal spatial organization, The symmetry show a topography very, very different and often very complex, which does not match with a unique model. And so if for few sites the low quality of the data and the difficult archaeological stratification do not allow one to establish which kind of distribution prevails, for others instead the picture is clearer. And so a distribution of the graves in rows is visible in Carignano, for example, with Vidizzolo, Sacca di Goito, and Strada Cagliari and Sacca di Goito, Strada Mussolina. In Kinshin groups, it is visible in Calvisano, Cividale, Leno and Nocera Umbra. In gender and age groups, it is visible in Centallo, Ferrante, Saggio No. 1, Spilamberto, Trezzo, and so on. Then we have a single private family cemetery in Campione, Mombello, Trezzo, Cascina, San Martino. Besides this, the remaining cemeteries show a more articulated topography, where overlapping patterns coexist. For example, Casteltrosino, Collegno and Montichiari are organized in rows in a first phase and family groups in a second phase, show with a form a spatial evolution from one generation to another. For example, Buia, Romanze, and Rivoli, Perosa are clustered in family groups, but with, in the first two cases with the children's sector. And in the last case with a separation between males and females. Or again, Campochiaro, Vicenna, and Campochiaro, Morrione, about also Casal Moro, San Faustino, and Grangia, finally, are ordered in rows, but with special areas, as the concentration of grave goods in some areas seems to suggest. As regards the landscape location, finally the cemeteries have some recurring elements, being in fact generally placed either in open spaces or close to ancient buildings, or again inside or around churches. And in general, these few options combine different ways, making it rather difficult to point out some general trends. Among the sample, 19 sites are located in open spaces, often nearby rivers and roads, and in three cases nearby Roman villas. With only two exceptions, these are cemeteries of new foundation, if I can, of new foundation, and some of them have ditches, wooden and stone monuments to delimitate the burial area, like Campochiaro, Morrione, Casalmoro, San Faustino, and Lano Porzano. 10 cemeteries are located inside or close to ancient buildings and pre-existing funerary sites, like Borso del Grappa, Fiesole, Via Riorbico, Montecchio Maggiore, and Goito Strada Cagliara. 8 sites finally show the presence of a church or a chapel, which, as it is well known, can be built over a cemetery already in use, like for instance in Arezzo, Casteltrosino, Mombello, Selviciola, and Trezzo, Cascina, San Martino, or can be built over a new place, like in Buia, Calvisano, Centallo, and Mombello. So, to this brief overview on the size, the topography, and the landscape location underlies how these three aspects are very variable and not suitable with repeatable schemes. Maybe due to the low number of sites taken into account, in fact, general trends do not emerge. Thereafter, in order to achieve some valid results, it is useful to approach this set of data by looking at some specific and very peculiar cases, while forms of distinction and integration within the funerary space appear quite clearly. And this is, for instance, the case of the isolated graves and of the multiple graves. Only two isolated graves are testified in the sample, and they come from Casteltrosino and Sacca di Goito, and they are both part of a wider context where bigger cemeteries are also documented. Casteltrosino develops over several years hills around the modern village and it is made up of three main cemeteries, Santo Stefano, Fonte, Campo, plus an isolated grave in Contrada Pedata, the number four. 289 graves have been dug up as a whole, dating back between the end of the 6th and the beginning of the 8th century. The single grave in Contrada Pedata was carved in the rock, and it contained a man with many ornaments, a gold saddle, and some horse accessories qualify the dead as a knight. Sacca di Goito, Strada Cagliara, covers the site of Sacca di Goito covers a flat surface of 2,200 square meters and is made out of two main cemeteries, Strada Cagliara and Strada Mussolina, and 528 graves have been dug up as a whole, dating back between the end of the 6th and the end of the 7th century. Strada Cagliari is located beside a pre-existing ancient burial area of the late 4th century, the beginning of the 5th, which is in the which the grave is in black. And from which it is separated by a ditch. Just beyond this limit, in the late Roman cemetery, an isolated early medieval grave is located. It is characterized by a large pit and by a wooden chamber, and despite being robbed in ancient times, it contained a horse head with a bit, which qualify again the dead as a knight. The two isolated graves of Castel Trusino and Sacca di Goito can be compared to the graves of the so-called founding fathers, which usually started a cemetery and were characterized by wooden chambers and artifacts and weapons, plus several elements related to the horse. Graves of founding fathers have been excavated in many cemeteries, Campochiaro, Collegno, Cividale, Leno, Porzano and Nucera Umbra, and they occupy the center of the burial area or they are scattered across the cemetery within small groups. And in both cases, they work like foci around which the cemetery is organized. This is particularly evident in Campochiaro Morione, where the founding fathers, interred with their horses, are in the middle of the cemetery, surrounded by empty spaces. And this symbolic topography is the model also for the isolated graves, which anyway takes this separation to the highest level, because there is a sort of segregation from the rest of the community of the dead. And in fact, even if located in separated position, the founding fathers here in Campochiaro are well integrated within the surrounding graves, while the isolated graves of Castel Trusino and Sacca di Goito are totally excluded, almost put in a timeless dimension which transformed them in mythical ancestors, something like that. In comparison with the isolated graves, a completely different concept of space is expressed by the multiple graves, which emphasize the physical inclusion, since they are characterized by more than one deposition taking place either in the same moment but or during a longer period with several reopenings of the pit and manipulation of the bodies. Multiple graves are attested in at least 10 sites of the sample and the study, among which Campione, Mombello and Trezzo, Cascina San Martino, are the most significant. All these cemeteries are small in size, developed around the church. In Campione, seven graves contain 15 skeletons, The multiple graves are 6. The grave number 11, in particular, hosted 5 individuals, namely a young man and an adult male, a girl and 2 children. The grave number 18 instead hosted a child and an old man, who in particular had a genetic malformation also found in the skeleton of grave number 15, to me, the 4, a possible kinship relation between the two. In Mombello, there are 28 graves which contain at least 35 skeletons. The multiple graves are 9, and among these, the more busiest crowd are the grave number 8, with 3 men, a young boy, a woman, and 3 unknown sex adults. The grave number 13, with a child, an adult male, a young man, and an old woman, and an unknown sex adult. And the number 23, with a child, 2 men, and a woman. In Trezzo, finally, 27 graves contain 35 skeletons, and the multiple graves are 6. In particular, the number 10 hosted a man, a woman, a boy, and a child, who are relatives according to DNA analysis. Finally, the grave number 15 hosted a child and a man, who is a relative of the subject in grave 16, according always to DNA analysis. The funerary practice of these three sites, focuses quite clearly, according to me, on the idea of spatial contiguity, which symbolized the blood linkages through the use of a well-defined burial area, and above all, through the use of the multiple graves, which collected up 2 or more family members inside the same pit. These three sites can be interpreted as private family cemeteries of large kinship groups belonging to probably the elite of the kingdom, as the wealthy grave goods and the funerary chapels indicate. For the site of Campione, moreover, some written documents testify of the funerary chapel had been built by rich merchants and landowners. While for the site of Mombello, the archaeological excavation have localized the house of the aristocratic family at about 200 meters from the burial site. So apart from the private family cemeteries, the kinship group is the basic unit also in many larger Lombard cemeteries, which are organized in different groupings made up of men, women, and children, therefore interpretable as households. In few cases, anyway, sections of bigger cemeteries or small independent burial sites cluster the dead by gender and age, and this special funerary geography shows apparently an alternative identity from the kinship affiliation, whose meaning is of course today not completely understandable, but anyway the archaeological data allows one to do some speculations. About the cemeteries organized by gender and age, the site of Ferrento Soggio number 1 is the most interesting, given that it allows one to illustrate the funerary segregation of infants and children, and to briefly touch the issue of the underrepresentation of women in the Italian Lombard cemeteries. Ferrento is a complex site composed of 2 main cemeteries, namely Ferrento Soggio number 1 and Ferrento Soggio number 2, plus some other graves which were brought to light during old archaeological excavation and which are therefore only partially documented. The cemetery of Soggio number 1 is made up of 4 burials with 6 individuals whose 5 children aged between 1-3 years and a baby few months old. They were buried inside an ancient Roman structure where the walls were still standing, and in a very interesting way, the ancient layers where the graves are were characterized by many, many coins, dating back to the 4th century. The practice to bury young children in separated places from the rest of the funerary community dates back to the Roman time, and it is documented also in other early medieval Italian cemeteries, like, for example, Buia or Romans di Zones. If the reservation of special places for young children qualifies them as an excluded group, actually, this says very little about the meaning. It is likely, anyway, that it had something to do with the symbolic and magical sphere. Also, in fact, in cemeteries where children are together with the adults, they often receive strange objects like amulets, like, for instance, the child with the Roman coins in Collegno or the child with the prehistoric engraved stone in Monticchiari, Monte San Zeno. Inferent to this magical dimension is well documented by the reusing of ancient Roman ruins, and above all, the presence of amount of coins mixed with the earth where the burials were inserted. Finally, friend to Sergio number one is also interesting because the anthropological and DNA analysis suggests insights into the debate issue of the Italian archaeological literature, which is known as the invisible women, and which regards the sex ratio between males and females. A study on a consistent sample of cemeteries, in fact, has shown how in Italy the sex ratio is often totally unbalanced in favor of men, while the women are almost always underrepresented. The explanation for this phenomenon has not yet been found, but a theory is that girls were discriminated in the access to food, to hygienic care, and therefore they died at a young age, thereby being invisible in the archaeological reports. I don't know if it is the right answer, but quite curiously, the data from Ferrento fits perfectly to this hypothesis because the pathological studies have shown several diseases linked to malnutrition, and while the DNA analysis, which have interested four of out of the six individuals, have shown that they were all females. As regards the invisible women, in a way, some exception can be found, and the cemetery of Spilamberg is one of these exceptions, since among the 29 skeletons which have been excavated, 14 were women, only 8 were men, and 7 were unknown sex individuals. And this high percentage of females goes against the general trend documented in the Italian Lombard cemeteries, but fits perfectly with the central role of grave 62 and grave 63, which belong to two women and are the most ancient and the richest graves of the cemetery. And moreover, they are linked with a horse grave and with a ritual pit filled in with pottery remains, animal bones and ashes. And, well, the small size of the cemetery and the high number of women and also the central role played by the female symbolism leads one to think of Spilamberto as a burial area reserved to a special group of people, of women, even if nothing more can be said about that. A similar situation is testified also in the funerary church of Centallo, where among the 113 skeletons which have been excavated, 66 were males and only 31 were women. And so, as for in Centallo, the high number of men matches with the general trend, but anyway, it's quite significant and fits with the privileged position occupied by men inside the church, as we can see through the group of gray, of male graves clustered together inside a room in front of the church. The site of Centallo allows one to introduce the last important issue which deserves attention, namely the space hierarchy inside and outside churches. This theme has been much studied by the Italian archaeologists and therefore very little can be added. Nonetheless, it is pertinent with the idea of exclusion, inclusion and discrimination, integration, and so it cannot be ignored herein. The construction of funerary churches in the early Middle Ages had, among others, the function to make graves visible in the landscape by means of a monument, which kept alive the memory of the dead across generations. And as I will say later on, also the reuse of ancient buildings for funerary purposes worked for the same aim. And the construction of churches and the reuse of ancient buildings anyway had a slightly different meaning, if only because the churches generally came after the monument reuse. Funerary churches can be built either of a pre-existing cemetery or in a new place. In both cases, the relationship between the church and the grave says much about the funerary techniques of distinction and integration on the basis of the position of burial inside or outside the walls. Although the picture may be more complex, the sample and the study shows some special burial points inside the churches, and these were usually close to the apse, under the altar, nearby the nave along the central axis, or along the walls, or again nearby or under the front. In the site of Campione, the most prominent grave, number 10, was located in the middle of the nave, close to the threshold. It contained a 30, 40 years old woman and a newborn. Some remains of golden dress have been found together with an amulet and a silver coin walled in the tomb structure. In the site of Casteltrosino, the most prominent grave, the number 49, was located in the northwest corner of the nave, close to the perimeter walls. It contained an adult woman furnished with a silver buckle, a comb, and a glass bottle. And the site of Centallo, the most prominent grave, the number 12, was located nearby the northern apse under the altar. It contained a 40 years old man furnished with the iron working tools. These graves are usually interpreted as graves of the founders who had restored or built the church. And moreover, as Campione and Casteltrosino show, the women are well represented. And this data is not surprising at all, because written sources testify the central role of women in building private chapels, as well as in administrating them and in keeping alive the memory of the family. Beside these new graves, which are contemporary with the church, in many cases, funerary chapels had inside also pre-existing burials. This is, for instance, the case of Servitola, where on a pre-existing burial area, a chapel incorporated some ancient graves in the apse, in the main room, as well as new deposition along the walls. And situations like this are very frequent in the Italian early medieval cemeteries, even if the low quality of the documentation does not allow one to look in detail at this phenomenon. But the cemetery of Trezzo, anyway, is a well-documented case. Archaeologists have found two main phases in the development of the cemetery. The first phase dates back between the end of the 6th century and the first half of the 7th century and sees the installation of graves over an ancient Roman villa. In particular, the graves number 6. The graves number 16 and 17, were located inside a small square room. According to the grave goods, these are the most ancient graves of the cemetery, together with another grave the number 18. At about the end of the 7th century, the Roman wars were obliterated and a small chapel was built over the richest and ancient graves. While those lacking weapons and ornaments and outfits are excluded and left outside the chapel in the circle. Okay, differently from churches, the use of ancient buildings for funerary purposes still lacks in Italy of a detailed study, above all on a national level. This is a gap that needs to be filled in, given that this practice is attested over the entire Italian territory. As shown by the cemeteries taken into account, the early medieval graves reused different types of buildings and sites, like, for instance, a prehistoric cremation cemetery in Borso de Grappa. The prehistoric graves are that one with the arrows. An Etruscan Roman temple in Fiesole Vieri Orbico, an Etruscan mound in Granta, a Roman house in Mombello. Two opposite interpretations are generally suggested about this practice, and some scholars think of it about think of it like a casual or practical phenomenon for obtaining building materials, and while other scholars think instead of it as a symbolic ritual for answering cultural beliefs or political aims. In this last case, the abandoned settlements would be employed to create mites of origin and links with ancestors in order to claim also rights over land and people. And as a recent study underlined, the use of ancient buildings was particularly widespread in Tuscany, where the 66% of burial sites show this practice, according to the following percentages. So 18% of portable objects, artifacts, and building material, 34 early sites, buildings and structures, 14 both. The high reuse of ancient objects and earlier monuments is in Tuscany accompanied by also a low provision of grave goods and in particular of weapons. These two aspects form a sort of regional funerary custom which focuses on the memory of the past, and it is likely that the cultural geography of Tuscany, where many surviving remains of the Etruscan and Roman times are still standing nowadays, had shaped a way to commemorate the dead which appears peculiar of this area. So to conclude, the Italian Lombard Cemetery can be made up, as we have seen, of hundreds of graves or smaller groups. They can be organized in rows and groupings by gender, age, and parental linkages of the dead. They can be inserted in open spaces or close to monuments. And the composition and combination of all these options identify category individuals and categories of people who case by case assumed a privileged or neglected role within the funerary space. To be buried, in fact, in a large or small cemetery, in a gender group, in a family sector, around the church, or near an ancient building, made a big difference, and had apparently a meaning in terms of techniques of distinction, discrimination, and integration inside the community of the dead. The graves of the founding father, for instance, are not included within the funerary community. A magical and almost supernatural dimension plays a central role in these cases, because by means of the segregation, these isolated graves become those of venerable ancestors. A similar magical dimension is visible also in the cemeteries dedicated only to children. Of course, on the meaning, only speculation can be drawn, but anyway, it's undeniable which newborns and young children received a special treatment. It may be possible to think about them as a group of people not still integrated in the society due to the young age or the weak social role inside the community, because they were still children. The kinship affiliation, above, is one of the most important identity representing the funerary context. The family is the basic organization unit in both large and small cemeteries. And in the context of private burial areas, the multiple graves in particular underlie the blood linkages through the spatial contiguity among the members of the family. Finally, also the construction of funerary chapels seems to be related to the memory of and the identity of a family. In fact, the church founders are usually buried inside the walls of the chapel, while other less important members occupy outside positions. Finally, broader identities, even if are difficult to grasp broader identities through the archaeological evidence, the case of Tuscany can be considered an exception. In fact, in this region, we have seen the use of ancient sites for funerary purposes is rather widespread and seem to represent a cultural and funerary identity which is peculiar of the region. So, voilà, I conclude.